Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the live podcast on behalf of Expatiate Communications. My name is Arjun Kushwaha, and I am one of the directors of the firm. We manage a lot of special education activities as well as provide consulting. And, you know, we are putting this live podcast today out for special education administrators, staff members, as well as general community, because we have one of those local school districts, which is providing exceptional services and is managing remote learning for special education really well. So we have our honorable guest, Dr. William G. with us, who will be interviewed by Ms. Kim Hopko, our Senior Director of Consulting, on procedures and challenges which ABC Unified has faced, as well as probably found a way to get around while they serve their most vulnerable students. So without further ado, Ms. Kim Hopko and Dr. William G, welcome to our show. And I will let you, take the reins from here and inform our audience on how we can do special education a little bit better, which is challenging and most of the times during this period of school closure. So welcome both of you, Ms. Kim Hopko.
Thank you, Arjun. Very glad to be here today with Dr. G and share a little bit of our experiences during COVID-19. Dr. G, just for our audience, why don't you give us a little bit of your background in the field of special education?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you to Arjun and to you, Kim, for allowing us to talk a little bit about what we're doing in special education with ABC. Yeah, it's been quite a trip for all of us, and including those of us in ABC Unified School District. So just very briefly, my background, I've been doing special education for a long time. In fact, my first students that I first taught are now in their mid-50s. So it tells you a little bit about perhaps my age and how long I've been doing this. I started as a ninth grade social studies teacher, was a special education teacher, a school psychologist. I worked as an assistant principal and an elementary school principal. I worked as a principal for severely disabled kids, as program specialist in special education. I was a compliance director with our local county office of education. And then I've been a SELPA director with a couple of different school districts. So a lot of what I've done, though, has really been on legal compliance issues, kind of the two things that I've had the most passion for and the most experience, sometimes desired, sometimes just because that's what I was pushed into, is the legal compliance stuff, all the due process hearings, resolving matters with parents and attorneys who where issues arise, and also the focus on basic educational skills of kids. That's been sort of a passion of mine throughout, is making sure that our kids have opportunities to expand their basic reading skills, basic math skills, those kinds of things that our struggling readers have. When I think back to the kinds of things that I had the most passion about, and when people talk about my career, I often go back to the kids that where we've made a difference in terms of those basic reading skills and bringing those kids up to a higher level. So just very briefly, that's a little bit about my background. So I've been doing it for a while.
Great. And SELPA director, your current position is kind of unique to California. Could you share with our out-of-state listeners in a nutshell what a SELPA director does?
Sure. They have similar kinds of organizations or architecture in other states as well. And I think New York is called the VOCES. It's essentially, we've got some really tiny school districts. One of our school districts in California has a total of 6 students in the school district. There are many school districts that have much smaller, 20, 25 students in a school district. Those are the rural counties in Northern California where there are very few people. So they take these individual school districts and bind them together so that the group of these districts is bound together in something called special educational local plan areas. There's about 134 of them in the state of California. So they get together, and they the purpose of this is to make sure that those kids with special education needs, when those needs arise, that someone is going to be assured that they'll get the supports that they need. And when you have a small, tiny school district of less than 30 students in the school district, those kids could be very expensive, and that might actually bankrupt a particular small school district. So it's protection of the school districts, but it also provides tremendous protection of the rights for those kids with disabilities. So those are SELPA directors. Now, we also have some really large school districts, Los Angeles Unified being one of them, 600,000 kids. So with all of those kids in one school district, they don't bind with any other school district. They are by themselves. About a third of our school districts in California have a single person who is their SELPA director. They're large enough just for that school district. So about a third of them are single districts, and the other two-thirds are what's called multi-district SELPA directors. In every one of those school districts, there's going to be someone responsible for special education. They're often special education directors. But again, if they're really tiny, it might be one administrator who's doing just about everything, including teaching in the classroom. So that's the nutshell of what a SELPA director is. Some of us who are single district SELPAs, like ABC, are large enough to have just one single district SELPA director. Also have special education directors as well. Most do not, some do. So we're fortunate to have both a special education director and a SELPA director.
Great, thank you for that. Now you mentioned that you're with ABC Unified School District, which is one of the 80 school districts in Los Angeles County. What are the demographics of your particular district?
Well, ABC is in Southwest Los Angeles County. We're really close to Long Beach. We have a little tiny piece of Long Beach, but not very much. Most of our students come from the cities of Artesia, Hawaiian Gardens, and Cerritos. ABC, by the way, stands for three different school districts that merged about 54 years ago. Let's see if I remember the names of these three tiny school districts: Artesia, Bloomfield, and Cerritos school districts blended about 54 years ago. But Bloomfield is now just a street. It's no longer even a city, and different. It's really not a school district. Our population is primarily made up of about half of our students who are Hispanic. We've got about a third of our students who are Asian. That is that they're primarily from India, from China, from a variety of other Asian countries. Those are the two biggest ones. So it's interesting because we've got the Asian population, for the most part, is a relatively well-to-do population that live in our school district. There's a real focus on education. As you drive in the areas where we have lots of Asian businesses, you'll see a disproportionate number of tutoring organizations. We have a lot of weekend tutoring organizations that are spread throughout, as well as the actual after-school tutoring businesses that have their shingles out. In the Hispanic, more Hispanic portion of our school district, it's our southern end, the population isn't as wealthy. The homes are not as large. They are certainly, as we don't see those kinds of businesses that I was just talking about. So there really is kind of an important economic divide between Hawaiian Gardens, which is probably our poorest area of the school district, and the Cerritos area. In between there's a city called Artesia, which is sort of a blend of both of those things. So we do have this important cultural divide in the city, and that also even extends to politics. The Asian population tends to be more engaged in the politics of the school district, and they're more engaged in their city politics as well. That has changed over the years. Just as I was coming on board about 6 years ago to ABC, the school board was predominantly an Asian school board. And so that has begun to change now. Our president of our school board is Hispanic, Dr. Olga Rios, and more of our school board is becoming representative of who our community is. So I'm very proud to be part of ABC and the way that it's representing our different communities.
Great. Well, ABC Unified School District is known for being a very innovative district. How did the superintendent and the cabinet determine the process for distance learning once COVID was upon us?
Yeah, so the prior to the closure of our schools, we all were getting hints that maybe we needed to consider alternative ways of educating our kids. Our county superintendent, Dr. Duardo, about 3 weeks before most schools began closing, sent an email out to all of us and said something in a video chat as well, that we need to start thinking about distance learning. It wasn't a directive, it was just a suggestion. And our county office of education often aren't able to give directives, but there's a lot of leadership and of the bully pulpit component of working in the counties. So she began with that statement, and then it led to us to begin asking questions. How are we going to be providing this kind of service, just like every other school district? As you said, there are 80 in our county. How are we going to educate our kids? Well, we relied on the strengths that we have. And I think we all do that whenever we're suddenly thrown into a new way of looking at things. Our biggest strength, there are several of them, and we relied on them. About 5 years ago, we started a strong partnership with Google. We adopted Google, they adopted us, and we developed strong connections to the personnel at Google. And our director of technology, Dr. Colin Sprigg, really took the lead about 5 years ago and developed what he called the TIP program, T-I-P, the Technology Improvement Project. It was not dissimilar from some of the things that were happening elsewhere in Los Angeles Unified, for example, with Dr. John Dacey was promoting the use of one-to-one iPads throughout the school district. At that time, it seemed very innovative. People were not necessarily embracing it, but looking back at what he was doing, kind of like what we were doing in ABC, it looks like it was a very progressive and important component. Thank God we were all pushed in that direction by people like Dr. John Dacey and by our own Dr. Colin Sprigg. We started developing this requirement that every student in the school district have to have a one-to-one device. So we started getting iPads and we started getting Google Chrome devices and other kinds of devices into the hands of every student. It was a five-year process. So this was the end of our five-year process. And every student already had access, at least in the classroom, to these devices. So that was an important for us. We had developed and expected every one of our teachers to already begin using Google Classroom. The Google Classroom format was something that we'd been promoting for years. We had a lot of professional development on it. That doesn't mean everybody embraced it. It just means that it was available and people were encouraged to use it. We had dozens of technology assistants that we've hired, and they were designed. Their role was to assist teachers to make sure that those things were adopted seamlessly. They were easily accessible at every school. They went to every school every week, sometimes multiple times a week, and assisted teachers so they got more and more comfortable with the technology of it. But a couple of other strengths are pretty unique to ABC. One is that decades ago, there were some real significant stresses between the union and the school district, and it was really damaging. as a result of that, ABC really took a turn and worked really strategically and thoughtfully and carefully to make sure that that kind of union and administration conflict didn't occur again. So we began developing lots of open dialogues with our unions and superintendents and our union presidents work regularly, weekly, and talk about all of the issues. They've developed a no surprises practice so that there are no surprises that either one of them are suddenly thrust upon. There's a lot of positive communication and trust that developed. That took a long time to develop. Our superintendent, Dr. Mary Sue, has just been extraordinarily forthright. And she is beloved by the school district people. She's beloved by our union partners. She's beloved by the teachers, by our administration. I think the first to say, she stands on the shoulders of the people who came before her, who also worked to try to develop this trust. So those were really important components, and that led to parents who trusted us. So those were the strengths that we already had coming into this COVID-19. So we were able to build on that. Let me be more specific. When this then happened, where our superintendent of the county told us this was going to happen, our technology department jumped in early and said, okay, if we might be going out, what do we need to know before our kids leave? So they sent a survey out to every single family. We have 20,000 students. So we sent out surveys to every single student and asked them to complete it and asked them, do you have access to the internet? Do you have a computer at home that you can use? So of those, most of them returned. And we learned that we had about 800 to 1,000 homes that didn't have access to the internet. So we had to purchase hotspots for every one of these folks. We were worried that we were going to have a shortage of hotspots. So we hooked up with Sprint, and we jumped in really early, and we discovered that we could get for $22 a month hotspots. So we purchased those and we distributed them to our students. So that was one component. The other component was that we also needed to know how many computers we needed. So in that same survey, we asked how many people have a computer access at home. Well, in retrospect, we probably should have asked a more detailed question, because we learned that siblings would all report they had a computer available, but it might have been the same computer, and it was the same computer the parents may have been using at home as well. So even though at first we thought we only needed 1,000 or two computers for home, we learned in the end that we needed about 5,800. So we got those 5,800 and we sent those to the homes as well. So it was all part of a very intentional planning that happened very, very quickly. Our academic services folks, led by Dr. Valencia Mayfield, began putting together guidance documents on what our teachers would provide. We provided guidance documents to our parents. We'll get into that a little bit later, but it was those were the most important components about how it is that we began doing distance learning. I think it's similar to what other school districts are doing. The difference here is that we had this kind of jump on some of the other school districts by getting these hotspots at a very early in the process and getting these computers out. And so we were able to do this survey before our parents, before our kids went home as well.
Well, your district certainly had laid a wonderful foundation with your partnership with Google and your training and the technology assistants that were there. So definitely you can tell that the leadership in the district had been forward thinking, not necessarily that you would need to use this technology for this reason, but just to bridge that digital divide in the district and provide, you know, such great technology for your staff and the students. I have a question. ABC Unified has something called Tech Tuesdays. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. Excuse me for a second. Yes, our Tech Tuesdays are really an extension of what was happening for the last 5 years. We've been providing professional development for all of our teachers. I talked a little bit about how our technology assistants are going into the schools and assisting them. But our Tech Tuesdays have really taken that to a whole new level. We've got a woman by the name of Irene Orozco. Irene has been extraordinary. Every Tuesday, teachers are invited to participate in somewhere between 5 or 10 sessions that last about 15 minutes for every session. And teachers are encouraged to participate in those. And those things are lots of different kinds of apps that they might be using in the classroom. For example, they might be reviewing how to use Seesaw, which is a simple video app that are really designed for younger kids. It allows kids to make very simple apps in response, very simple videos in response to questions that the teacher may pose, and those are shared. They might be learning how to do virtual field trips for our kids. They might be going through a session where they learn about the various ways that Padlets can be used, or Pear Decks. There's a basic backbone of all this is Google Classroom usage. I mentioned earlier that all of our expectation was that they all use Google Classroom, but over the last 5 years, many people, certainly disproportionately in my age group, were less likely to embrace Google Classroom because we already had a routine going on. So those folks who are already accustomed to it, they jumped right in. But a lot of people, again, perhaps the people in my age group, were less likely to have jumped into Google Classroom. So all of these sessions, including things like Google Slides and another one is called Guardian, all of those are available, are recorded, and people can listen to that entire session at any time. So they're encouraged to do the live sessions on these Tech Tuesdays, but they also then participate, if they want to, by listening to the recordings at a later time. These are led by Irene that I've just mentioned, but they're also led by David Franklin, one of our other tech gurus. They're all Google certified teachers. And then there's many of our other teachers who step up and volunteer and say, hey, I'm willing to provide a session on how to use Padlet or how to do Screencastify, that kind of thing. It's pretty exciting stuff. And so, yes, it's been extraordinary.
That's amazing. Now, this has been the global movement for the district, but specifically, how was the involvement of the Department of Special Education? You mentioned earlier that Dr. Valencia Mayfield took a lead. Could you explain that?
Sure. Dr. Mayfield is Assistant Superintendent of Academic Services, and under her, there's a couple of curriculum people, secondary and elementary. We also have our IT director, Dr. Colin Sprigg, who I mentioned. We also have our early education supervisor, and then she has Lisa Davis, who is in charge of special programs, and then there's two of us in special education. So just from the very beginning, she got together her services team and threw the question out, what are we going to do? Now we're faced with a new issue. Again, we embraced the technology piece that we had already going, so that was easy for us. But there was also the special education component. How are we going to meet the needs of these kids? And it was, honestly, it was just part of how we did general education. We have worked hard in these years to dismantle the wall between general education and special education. We're just part of the team. So we focused mostly on what kinds of accommodations our kids need.
But other than that, the expectation is that our kids will be doing the same kinds of things that our general education kids are. Now, there'll be exceptions with our more severely disabled kids, and we'll talk about that perhaps a little later. But for our kids that are either in resource programs or our kids who are in typical special day classes, which is our self-contained classrooms, for those of you who are in other states, those kinds of programs were our expectation is that they would run Google Classrooms, that in the same way that an elementary school student would have a Google Classroom for their particular class. If you're in a self-contained class, that teacher would offer Google Classroom opportunities designed specifically for you, maybe for several others of in your class, maybe for the entire group. So Google Classroom allows them to specify the kinds of activities, the kinds of videos, the kinds of homework that they're assigned to. So in many ways, what our special education people are doing are the same as what our general education people are doing. There has been it's been interesting to see this, because we have some students that have really shined in this online environment that we wouldn't necessarily see. I was talking to a teacher just last night who was telling me about a student who is, he has been diagnosed with autism. He's socially awkward. He's often, you can tell he's under stress when he's at school. He doesn't quite fit in. He's a young elementary school student. And he's academically pretty capable. But these other issues often seem to interfere, and they interfere with his really ability to engage even in the academics, because the social components cause anxiety for him. Mm-hmm. But during this time of COVID-19, where the teacher checks on with him regularly, and she's a resource teacher, we call it here in California, RSP teacher, she checks in with him regularly about his work, and he is more engaged in his work than he's ever been. She reports that it's probably due to the few social distractions, that he doesn't have to worry about any negative social interactions with his other students, that he academically can focus now. He enjoys it. He's getting more work done. She said that she's never seen him as happy as he is now. I would not say that this is a preferred mode, because even though these social interactions are a struggle for him, it really is important that he have models of appropriate social interaction. But you can see that there's been some real positive gains from having this distance learning, at least for some of our kids. And we can talk about some of that, those other components later. I know your question was about how did we get involved and what was our component. We were involved from the beginning. All of the guidance that we provided guidance to our parents and to our teachers about what would a daily schedule look like. What's the homework going to look like? How do we train our pairs? How do you use your pair educators? Our pair educators are used in a variety of ways now, and that's expanding even as we're talking today. We're beginning to broaden our use of pair educators. How do we do grading? We got guidance from the state about grading, and that is, like many other states, we really are attempting to do no harm for students in their grading. We don't want grades to go down because of the challenges somebody might have with distance learning. How do our resource teachers support students? All the kind of guidance came from our curriculum department, but it was all done in great collaboration with the special education director.
That's amazing. I think that what you've explained really points to the inclusive environment in ABC Unified, where special ed is part of the whole. There is no us and them. And I think that reflects positively on the leadership of the superintendent and the cabinet, as well as the cooperation with the union membership. And I think the benefit is definitely for the students. And that's a great thing.
We've been talking about least restrictive environment for many, many years, but I think as you shifted the language a little bit towards inclusive practices. It's changed a little bit. I don't honestly think there's much of a difference between the two, but I will say that in practice, the focus on inclusive practices has led us to structure things in a way that has, again, as you said, sort of reduce any separation between general education and special education. Yes, very true. Thank you.
Sure. How are related services being dealt with during this time? Speech and language, OT, adapted physical education, and others.
So we really didn't know how that was going to work. We just weren't sure. It's been interesting because we have in California these things called non-public schools and non-public agencies. They're sort of semi-private agencies that provide these services. And these folks, their livelihood depends on their ability to provide these services. And they were at least as quick as we were to try to figure out ways to provide these services. Now, they had a financial incentive to do it because if they weren't providing services, they wouldn't get paid, or at least they wouldn't get paid at the same level. So to our pleasant surprise, we have almost every related service that's now being provided online. Now, it's all done virtually. We have video conferencing availability. So our adaptive PE teachers are doing extraordinary jobs at connecting with kids. Now, they might have a Google Classroom as well. And parents and those students get onto those Google Classrooms and they can click on the videos. They can see their assignments. But indeed, we also have our adaptive PE teachers who are doing group activities and individual activities, leading the group in a variety of exercises. We have speech and language teachers who are embracing video conferencing. We sort of shy away from the use of the word teletherapy, but we're using video conferencing because we just think it's a broader term, and our speech and language folks are a little more comfortable with it. But those are done both in individual sessions as well as group sessions. We've got some of our speech and language teachers are actually signing on with the synchronous learning that's happening with the classroom. A special day class teacher will have a lesson prepared. Kids will participate in either small groups, large groups, or individually, and the speech and language teacher will actually jump on with that lesson, and they'll participate, or they'll do it individually, just like they were back in their own office. So occupational therapists, we have our occupational therapists. We actually hire an outside company to provide those services for us, but they're doing occupational therapy in exactly the same way. Counseling is a really important component for all of our kids who are identified with social emotional needs. And our therapists have been doing video conferencing with them from the very beginning stages. We've got Eddie Hernandez, who's our lead coordinator for social emotional issues in special education. And he's just done an extraordinary job at getting our therapists to connect with our families. Again, we're fortunate because our families trust us. So we put some protections in place, and we have parents who have signed off on waivers to allow our folks to provide that therapy directly with the students, even if the parents are not there. And it's just gone really well. I can't think of a single related service that we haven't figured out some way to provide it. Now, it's not to the same amount. If the IEP said three times a week, 30 minutes with counseling, that oftentimes can't happen to the same degree. So they're often shorter sessions. They're often a little less often. And the issues that are often addressed are different issues than they would be because of the classroom itself has changed. So, the related service has really gone surprisingly well.
That's amazing. That's great that kids are still getting what they need and deserve. Could you share a little bit about how you're providing services for students who have more significant disabilities.
Yeah, so we're doing a lot with those kids with disabilities, and we're getting better as time goes on. The kids with more severe disabilities, like our younger kids, those are the kids that I worry about the most. The kids, even without disabilities, who are kindergarten, first grade, second grade, the online learning programs that we do are really successful for older kids. And kids who are more capable, they don't need the level of parental support every step of the way. But for our younger kids, there's just nothing like being in a classroom. There's just nothing like to have those kids engaged. And so that's my biggest worry. Now, we've done a lot of things for our kids with some more severe disabilities. For example, we've got a lot of social activities that occur. In our adult transition program, for example, our kids participate on a regular basis, several once a day, and sometimes several times a day, in some kind of a real life video conferencing group. They might be using, for example, Edpuzzle, which is an app that allows people to show these videos, and these videos are regularly stopped and questions are posed to make sure the kids can answer questions, and it keeps them engaged. Or they might do, there's a lot of Cahoots games that go on. And recently our student attendance in these adult transition programs has gone up and up and up. It's been fascinating to watch. And even one of our teachers who wasn't embracing this technology a few weeks ago, a few months ago, just recently told me she's so glad that I kicked her in the butt, she said, to get her on the technology pieces, because she's doing more now than she ever thought that she could ever learn. It's been great. So we use our unique learning systems for our kids with more severe disability. We do that in our in the ULS system. Unique learning system has lots of programs, lots of lessons that are specifically designed for kids with more severe disabilities. Our News to You program, which is part of ULS, is something that they engage in a daily process. Our kids with more severe emotional disabilities, again, led by Eddie Hernandez, we call it our Bridges program. Those teachers have a much more specific, engaged process for all of the kids from our kindergartners all the way up to grade 12. We have one of our teachers with the most severe medically fragile kids. He kind of operates his day as much as possible as though he was in a classroom. He starts off the day and the kids participate virtually. He goes through his regular calendar lessons. He actually has a calendar in his house, this big calendar, just like you would see in many classrooms today. He goes through his regular calendar routine. He calls on individuals. They participate. His pairs are also engaged. The pair educators in the adult transition program are the same way. Those pair educators participate in ways, in many ways. They're actually more actively engaged because they have very clear responsibilities in every lesson. The baton is handed off to a pair educator, and that pair educator then takes over the lesson for a while. That doesn't happen as easily in the classrooms, but it does happen virtually. So in some ways, our pair educators are really stepping up and doing being more engaged and have more responsibility than they ever did. We also have, for our more severe disabilities, students with more severe disabilities, we send mindfulness videos out to all of them. We also have, for kids who are more severe behaviorally engaged, the younger students, our board certified behavior analysts, we have a program called APPS, which stands for Autism Paraprofessional Services. We have 22 peer educators. And those peer educators are meeting independently, sometimes without the teachers involved, with the students and their parents. and they're coaching those parents and they're coaching those kids and they're providing direct services. And they do it in a variety of ways. There's three specific things that we've offered to our parents, and we ask them to select any or all of these three things. That is that they can meet virtually online on a daily basis with our kids. The kids just love that because they already are connected to these paraeducators. The other is that they can make, our paraeducators will make videos for them, which they can show on a regular basis whenever the parents wish to. And the other is that we also have office hours. So those paraeducators will open up the video. They'll open up Google Meets, something similar to Zoom, and kids can engage on a predetermined schedule. So those paraeducators, again, have such a critical role for our students in ABC. And again, that's in our special education classes. And so far, it's just a few of our unique classes, but we're expanding that to more and more of our special education classes.
That sounds terrific. What great opportunities you've offered to all of the students in your district. You mentioned mindfulness videos. How is the school student body being engaged? I know distance learning can be isolating, but how are the schools, you know, engaging kids for social, emotional, and support? And
yeah, that's a concern that we all have. You know, what do we not know? What we expect that kids, we know the kids are struggling. We know the kids are feeling isolated. So we do have, we were fortunate. We hired a lot of social workers 2 years ago, and then they became permanent parts of our staff a year ago. I think it's 33. We have 30 schools, and we had 33 social workers we engaged, never anticipating COVID-19. So all of those folks are not just general education, they're special education, not just special education, they're general education as well. So there's a lot of outreach. We have opportunities for our parents to reach out. We have hotlines that they call into. We have email addresses that are staffed and the responses go out regularly. Our mental health professionals, as well as our therapists, have regular contact with our more susceptible students, checking in with the families. But again, we all suspect that there are kids out there who we're not reaching. We have about 80 to 85% of our students who are regularly participating in some form of this distance learning. And we reach out to the 15% that aren't participating, but we're not learning back as much as we want to. So we do worry about them. Now we are, unfortunately, our students themselves are reaching out. We do know that people are doing their own online social activities. So we love that. Sometimes as simple as our regular education students doing Animal Crossings and they're engaged in that kind of social activity. We also have opportunities for our parents to participate by talking with the school board, and they are participating now in our school board meetings in ways that we never anticipated they would beforehand. It's really easy to go to a school board meeting because they're all online now. So our parents are participating in those kinds of things. Our students are participating in those same school board meetings by giving feedback about what they want to see in their graduation ceremonies. But yes, the social emotional stuff is something that we all worry about. There's lots of opportunities, but we can't necessarily reach out to them if they're not responsive to us. And so we are worried about a small group of people, and we're doing what we can to try to bridge that.
Great. Well, it definitely sounds like you have a variety of platforms for both parents and students to reach out and to get support, which is amazing.
One of the ways it's interesting that one of my teachers was telling us was the use of Go Guardian. So Go Guardian is something that we install on the laptops that ABC owns and that are sent home, or it's installed on iPads and it's sent home. And the teachers then can monitor exactly what students are doing. And so when we see kids that are not actively engaged in learning, the teacher can actually reach out and say, hey, you're not watching the video I sent you. You're watching another video. Of course, we only do that on things that we own and not on anybody else's. But as a result of that, that also allows us to reach out to the parents. And we can say to the parents through email or through phone calls that we're concerned about so-and-so because they're not engaged in this activity. We can actually see real-time participation by our students, which gives us an opportunity to reach out to those parents.
Great. I have a question about funding. You mentioned that, you know, you'd provided hotspots and devices to those families that needed it. But how is the district gearing up for an economic impact from COVID?
Yeah, so we just, we understand that our school districts are going to be suffering significantly. So our local governor here, Governor Newsom, has told us that we have to be raised for about a $6.5-7 billion cut to our schools. It looks like that's going to have dramatic impacts on all of us because we haven't saved much money during these times. We're having to had to purchase these hotspots. We are paying our teachers and our paraeducators. We're paying our non-public schools and our non-public agencies. All of those things, all those salaries have continued to be paid. Almost all of our finances in schools go to salaries. So there are going to be significant cuts. How are we going to do it? I don't know the answer to that. Everybody's engaged in our cabinet trying to figure out how we're going to reduce those costs. The $6.5 to $7 billion cut from our governor is really that's only after a number of shifts have already occurred. It could have been easily twice that. But we're fortunate to have a deep well of reserves. ABC also has some reserves to help address this. But we don't know how we're going to be doing this. In fact, as we're talking about kids coming back in the fall, some of the things that we're talking about aren't going to be less expensive. The kids going to come back on a full-time basis, that's one thing. But a lot of districts are now exploring, including ABC, maybe doing coming back on a part-time basis for students, maybe a blended program. Maybe they'll be coming back a couple of days a week. Maybe we'll have all these different programs. That seems very likely that we'll have a variety of different programs. And if we're doing a variety of different programs, that means that we're going to need a lot of staff. Will we need more staff? I don't know the answer to that. I hope not. We're certainly going to be financially in great challenges. All the challenges that have been posed by COVID-19 directly are just going to be overwhelmed by the financial challenges that have happened in our economy because of COVID-19.
Great. It's definitely uncertain times. But yes. When we look at guidance from the federal government regarding special education and IDEA, no waiver has been granted. And does that change how your district is processing IEP meetings and evaluations during this time?
Well, we just aren't able to do evaluations, at least for almost all of our kids. We can't do evaluations because we just don't have the people there. And doing online evaluations is not an adequate substitute. I don't want to have a parent complain that our assessments are inadequate. And if we did an online assessment, they would be inadequate. So we are delaying all of our assessments. We're having many of our annual assessments even delayed the first few weeks, it was easy because those annual assessments require us to identify present levels of performance and to identify whether kids are making progress. We had recent information for that, but it's much harder for us now to identify very specific data points on where kids are. You just don't get that information nearly as easily when we're doing stuff online. So our annuals are getting delayed, our triennials are getting delayed, our assessments are not being completed. We're all very worried about this. And without these waivers, what does it mean? Well, we're worried about what it might mean in terms of our parents who might be filing formal complaints. So we are still pressing our federal government to try to give all of the states waivers. Secretary DeVos is proposing that we have a waiver, an extension, a flexibility for our kids who are turning age 3 from what we call Part C to Part B, so that they don't have an IEP in place directly at the age the third birthday, but rather they continue on the family service plan. So we're expecting that our federal government will allow that to continue to go from C to B without pain and without us violating any federal regulation, but we don't have that yet for anybody over the age of three. So yeah, we're all worried about that, and we're certainly doing what we can to try to get some of these flexibilities that really are required. Our kids in education, special education, are getting the services. They're getting the education. They're getting the interventions that we can to the maximum extent that we find practical. But we're worried about some of these federal regulations that we're not able to meet.
Right. And I think the waiting is the hardest part. And as the school year winds down and we're waiting for the federal government to provide, you know, for all districts in the United States, some guidance here, it does make for some nervous days, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, very much so. If this were to continue into the fall, and if this continued, let's say, to the beginning of January of 2021, all of those things just magnify and magnify and magnify. And we're going to have opportunities for many, many problems if we don't have these kinds of federal government waivers that we need. Our current system just doesn't allow us to provide these kinds of services that are currently in everybody's IEP to the same degree and exactly the same way. So it's just an impossible task.
Good. As we wind up here, I'd like to know, while we wait for more information, what are some steps your district is taking, in regards to COVID-19 as you're transitioning back to school functioning in the fall?
Well, we're probably doing the same things that many other school districts are doing, and that is we are continuing to look at, we're purchasing lots of personal protective equipment, first of all. Our purchasing department is actively, we've already received many, many masks, and that's continuing. We're trying to identify how it is we're going to provide social distancing for students. It's really hard when you have young kids. And when you magnify that with young kids who may lack social skills, magnified by kids who have difficulties with self-control, magnified by that by kids with significant health issues, how are we going to possibly provide this kind of social distancing? What are we going to do with a kid who has these disabilities and they might be spitting or they might be sneezing and they might not be willing or able to be trained so they're not doing those things? It's exposing other kids. We're exposing our staff members. Can we exclude those kids from attending school? Boy, that's a real difficult legal issue. Our nurses certainly have the right to keep kids from attending school, but it's a challenge when we say yes, but it's a part of their disability. It's that's not an easy one, and I hope our district isn't the one that's going to be trying to defend those practices. we're a lot talking about identifying boundary markers and how we're going to use boundary markers within classrooms and classroom tables. How do we do our blended learning? There's not a lot of decisions yet. Everybody's exploring the same thing. Los Angeles County of these 80 districts have a subset of superintendents who are looking at all of the issues about reopening. And ABC is just part of that same group of people. We're educating all of our people. We're educating the school board, our teachers, our peer educators, our classified. Everybody has to get educated about what we can do to protect ourselves and how we can keep our special education students fully engaged without discriminating against them. Again, I don't think that ABC is doing something unique in that area. We are struggling with how we're going to provide services, and we're wanting our kids to be engaged in every component. And we talked about these social components and the educational components, the emotional components, all of those things which just are not as easily done. We've got kids who are participating in all sorts of new apps. When we all do come back, the good news is when we all come back, we're all going to have more electronic tools, technology tools than we ever had. We all had the physical tools, but now we've got teachers and we've got students who've been using this technology in ways they've never had to use them before. There's that old phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. People have now established skills in ways that they've never established them before. So our classrooms are going to be better when we come back, because we're going to be integrating this technology into our classrooms. Finally, when we all get back together and we can all be again the classrooms that we want, with the kids learning, kids who are socializing, and teachers being able to minutely coach their kids on what they need.
Great. Well, it certainly sounds like ABC Unified is living up to its reputation as one of the more innovative districts in Los Angeles County. And I thank you, Dr. G, for your time today and your great detail on what the students in ABC Unified are doing during this trying time, and what the teachers and the staff at all levels have done. And you've certainly given us a lot of ideas with new apps and different classroom suggestions, and we appreciate that.
Thanks for letting us be here today. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Well, thank you to our listeners. On behalf of Expatiate Communications, I'm Kim Hopko. I welcome you to text or leave us a voicemail, and we will get back to you with any answers for questions that you have. You can reach us at 1-844-387-5836. Again, you can text or leave us a voicemail, 1-844-387-5836. Thank you for your time, and we were very appreciative of our audience. Thank you.